This weekend, the 6th annual Veg Fest is occurring at the Oregon Convention Center, going 2 days on the 18th and 19th. Featured at the event are 20 speaker sessions, 10 chef demos, 10 classes, 10 Ask the Expert sessions, and 4 family activities, not to mention over 100 exhibitors. For details, check the website at Northwest Veg's site at nwveg.org. Two of the speakers at this year's Veg Fest are presented here, medical doctors Michael Clapper and Milton Mills. Dr. Clapper is the author of Vegan Nutrition, Pure and Simple, and is the director of the Institute of Nutrition Education and Research. In this Pacifica Radio Classic, The Heart of the Matter, Dr. Clapper talks about the skin, bones, and body odor.
You replace the lining cells of your stomach every 5 days. You have a new stomach lining there. Your fat cells empty out and refill themselves every 3 weeks, which gets to be the secret of overcoming obesity, is stop eating fats. At least cut them down to a reasonable amount, which I believe is about 10 to 15% fat. And that comes from changing to animal-based foods to whole plant foods. Okay, if what is in the middle of your plate, instead of being a hunk of meat, is a plate of pasta, or better, is a whole grain rice casserole, or a big bowl of vegetable stew, or bean and barley soup with dark bread on it, those kind of meals automatically shift you to a low-fat diet. That is the secret of getting a nice lean body. 1 billion Chinese people have proven this conclusively. The average Chinese person eats 300 calories a day more than the average American does. The average American eats 2,400 calories, the average Chinese eats 2,700 calories, and yet the Chinese are lean folks. Why? Because it isn't a matter of how many calories you eat. The real issue is how much fat are you eating. The calorie is just a dumb old unit from physics class telling you how much heat is stored in a piece of food. If you burn a piece of broccoli, how much heat comes out? That's all the calories tells you. But it doesn't tell you that number if those calories are contained in clean burning carbohydrates that don't stick to you, or whether they're coming from oily, greasy, stick to your arteries fat. That's the issue. Don't reduce the amount of calories. Eat your 2,200 calories, but let it come from whole grains and fruits and vegetables and high-fiber plant foods. Eat all you want. Fill your stomach up with whole foods. You will get lean doing this. I eat a lot of food. But when someone sits down a big plate of rice and vegetables in front of me and someone says, how many calories in that food? The answer is, I don't care how many calories in this food. It's all fiber and water. It's going to pass right through me, most of it. And what I do absorb, I'm going to burn, and I stay nice and lean. Jack Spratt ate no fat. You know, that's why he was a lean guy, because he stopped eating fat. Mrs. Spratt was the one who ate the fat, and you always see her sitting down. Your skin renews itself every 5 weeks. The molecules in your liver are replaced entirely by new ones every 6 weeks. Your skeleton renews itself every 3 months. And the molecules in your body renew themselves atom for atom every 2 years. For that reason, don't think of yourself as stuck. You are constantly changing. It's a matter of changing the quality of that river of nutrients flowing through you. If it's a high-fat, highly processed, overly hydrogenated fuel mixture, then that's who you become. You are what you eat. Gee, I just thought of that. That's a... Wow. You are what you eat. How about that? Talk about a self-evident statement. You bet you are. Molecule for molecule, atom for atom, you are what you ate. And who you ate as well. Decide that you're going to put the cleanest stuff going through you, and you will become so. And it happens quickly, people. It happens within days. People clean up their diet. That's the most exciting part of working with people, cleaning up their diet, is that the response is so immediate, within 48 hours. Wow, they got more energy. Their bowels are working better. Their breath gets sweeter. Their body odor changes. No small matter. Why do this Listerine sell so much product? Why do people have such bad breath, dragon breath in the morning? Oh, dear, I don't want to kiss you. What's going on there? Do you think that is just slime left over on the roof of your mouth from from the last glass of Chablis you had the night before? Do you think that's what it is? That's not why your breath is bad, folks. Where is that really coming from? Indeed, you know the phenomenon when you eat something with garlic in it and you have garlic breath. Do you think that garlic, that's just little garlic particles in between your teeth and on your tongue? No, you swallowed garlic oil with allicin in it. That is very pungent stuff. And that oil is absorbed through your intestinal lining into your bloodstream, rides back through your bloodstream, through your lungs, crosses the alveolar membrane onto your breath, and you breathe that out. That is on your breath. You bet it's garlic breath. And that is coming from the inside. What smells so terrible on your breath in the morning is last night double pepperoni, extra lasagna pizza, or extra bacon and cheese pizza you had. That has been sitting in your intestine for 36 hours, or at least 12 to 18 hours, where it's 98.6 degrees, it's moist, it is filled with bacteria. What if you took that double pepperoni pizza and put it in a plastic bag and put a bunch of bacteria and water in there and put it on top of the stove where it's 98 degrees and let it sit there for overnight, and then come up and next morning and open that bag and put your nose in it? What do you think it's going to smell like? That's what's coming out on the breath. It's what comes out in the skin oils as well. And people told me after they've changed their diet and become vegetarians, gee, doctor, my body odor changed. My wife's not complaining about my body odor. No kidding. That is, meat contains some nasty substances that are produced by bacteria when they digest it in the intestine called putrescine and carnosine, and they smell terrible, and it comes out in the skin oils. People feel better and they function better immediately upon changing their diet. It makes that big a difference. The issue is what to eat and how do you make it happen in the supermarket and how do you make it happen in the restaurant. What does your body need to function? What do you really, really need? The basic four food groups tell you need milk, cow's milk, animal muscles, a couple of peas, and a hunk of bread, and the occasional apple to keep the doctor away. That kind of diet has had profound effects on the American populace, which you can see walking into any coronary care unit in this country. I'm saying that what we really need have nothing to do with that kind of diet. You need five things to run a human body. They have nothing to do with cheeseburgers and milkshakes. First of all, and all of this is not only in Ornish's book and McDougall's book, it's in my green vegan nutrition book, available at health food stores everywhere. What do you need to run a human body? First of all, what don't you need? How many here think meat is an essential nutrient for human beings? We're told so. But I defy any physiologist, any doctor, any biochemist, anybody to come here and say Homo sapiens is an obligate carnivore. We require the flesh of animals to survive. You can say that about mountain lions. You can say that about your house cat. They are obligate carnivores. They cannot synthesize the amino acid taurine in their liver. They must get it from the flesh of other animals. You have an enzyme that synthesizes lots of taurine from cysteine, which is in all the grains and beans you eat. You make all the taurine you need. You do not need to eat anybody else's taurine. You make all the cholesterol you need too. You don't need to eat anybody else's cholesterol either. The fact is the human body has absolutely no nutritional requirements for the flesh of animals. Iconoclasm number 3 today. But let me say it again. The human body has no nutritional requirement for animal flesh. If you open up Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine textbook, you will find no disease marked acute cow flesh deficiency. Nobody has ever been found dead, face down, 30 yards from the Burger King, one whopper away from salvation. Poor Joe. Cow flesh deficiency. Got him. The obvious case of it. There is no acute or chronic chicken flesh deficiency. There's no cow's milk deficiency. There are oxygen deficiencies, there's water deficiencies. There is no flesh deficiency. We have no nutritional requirement for these foods. And human beings have been nourishing themselves gloriously on diets free of animal products since the beginning of time. And they are doing it by the hundreds of millions around this planet as we speak. It is not an issue of serious scientific debate. And it turns out that the more animal products that are added to the diet, the fatter and sicker and deader your population gets, but pretty much a one-to-one ratio. And as societies get more affluent and more meat and fat comes into their diet, they get fatter, their arteries clog, and they die sooner.
The speaker you just heard was Dr. Michael Clapper, who will be presenting in Portland at the Enhancing Health with Plant-Based Nutrition series at the Adventist Medical Center on Friday, September 17th, and at VegFest at the Oregon Convention Center, September 18th and 19th. Details are on the website nweg.org. Also appearing at VegFest is Dr. Milton Mills, a board member of the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and critical care physician at Fairfax Hospital in Virginia. In this interview from October 2000, Dr. Mills speaks on the prevalence of stroke in young African American males. You just gave a talk of a variety of issues, and it's one that a lot of people are not getting the information on. You're mentioning stroke is very prevalent, and
right. I was absolutely blown away to learn that the leading cause of disability in relatively young African American males between 25 and 55 is stroke. I would have thought it was trauma, gunshots, or maybe even HIV, but no, it's actually stroke related to untreated high blood pressure.
Right. And stroke is virtually the heart attack of the brain?
Exactly. When a person has a stroke, it means that the blood supply to a region of the brain has been interrupted, which then causes that portion of the brain to die, and that results in, it can result in some severe disabilities with, you know, partial paralysis, memory loss, inability to speak, and a variety of other problems.
And that's likely to lead host to a whole bunch of other ailments.
Well, absolutely, because one, it predisposes you to developing more infections and a variety of other problems. And you know, equally devastating, it usually means that someone who formerly was the primary source of income for their family is suddenly unable to work. And as a result, a family which, you know, previously had been doing very well, it suddenly finds himself plunged into poverty because they now have a disabled family member who is no longer bringing in an income, and also constitutes a drain on what little income they have coming in. And I mean, I've heard terrible cases of families that you know, have lost their home, their cars. They've had to take their children out of private schools because they suddenly don't have the income because the leading wage earner is now disabled, and then the secondary wage earner has to spend a lot of time taking care of this person, and so may not be able to work a full-time job either. And it's very devastating. It can be very, very devastating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what have you been finding is the cause of these strokes in these young people?
Well, clearly, the leading causes of disease and death in Western societies such as the United States are diseases that are directly related to diet and lifestyle. And clearly, diet has been shown to be a major role player in the incidence of hypertension in the general population, but also in African Americans in particular. And what's really critical is that studies have shown consistently that by changing from a Western-style diet that's centered around animal foods and a lot of calories, a lot of fat, to a plant-based diet that has a lot more potassium, a lot more fiber, that you can really reduce the incidence of hypertension and, by extension, stroke, as well as heart disease, diabetes, which are also major causes of disability in the general populations, but it's much worse in communities of color as well. even in, you know, things like infection and so on.
PCRM, Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. Frequently, we're finding them more prevalent in, like, newspaper articles being quoted and, like, either sources of health information and the like. But can you mention what Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine is?
Sure. It's a group of physicians and non-physicians who are concerned about issues of nutrition and health. And our goal is to promote better health through better nutrition. And so we work through a variety of means, such as research, doing primary research to document the benefit of good diets. We lobby the government and other public officials to embrace more sound public policy with respect to nutrition programs. And we have also worked through the courts to try and force change that's more that will help promote better health for all Americans. So we, you know, we work through a variety of means to try and promote better health through better nutrition.
Dr. Milton Mills remarks on the connection between the U.S. dietary guidelines and the Department of Agriculture.
The U.S. dietary guidelines, which theoretically are designed to promote the health of better health for Americans, are actually put out by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And USDA's primary concern is making sure that they have a market for American agricultural output. And as a result, the Dietary Guidelines Committee is heavily weighted with industry representatives or people who have ties to various agribusiness interests. And as a result, that committee cannot possibly be completely objective in the recommendations it makes, because if someone receives a substantial part of their income from, say, the dairy board or the beef board or the poultry industry, they're not going to embrace recommendations that tell Americans to stop eating these foods, even if we have scientific evidence, which we do, that the less of these foods you eat, the healthier you will be. And so what we're saying is that if we're going to put together a committee that is going to make recommendations to promote health, it needs to be an objective committee, a committee that is not beholden to industry operatives, so that we can get guidelines that, in fact, are appropriate.
Milk mustaches. It was promoted heavily 10 years ago and is still seen today. Dr. Mills argues that milk doesn't do a body good and that there is a link between fat consumption and the incidence of breast and prostate cancer. This is going off to the popularity that here's another entertainer that's putting a milk mustache on, right. And sometimes they may not be, you know, heavy milk drinkers, but there they are as a leading proponent.
Well, I mean, you know, every time you see somebody in a magazine with a milk mustache, they get a couple $100,000 to do that. I mean, believe me, if somebody offered me $100,000, I'd be tempted. I'd like to think I wouldn't, but the money is very enticing. And frequently, these people have absolutely no understanding of the relationship between dairy foods and disease. They're just doing it for the money.
Right. They might be having talk with their agent there and
exactly.
Said, hey, this is a good idea. Milk, exactly. It's the body, it does it good.
Does the body good. I mean, we've all been you know, thoroughly brainwashed by the dairy industry to, you know, that, I mean, milk is identified with wholesomeness. It's identified with health. You know, milk, the perfect food. It does the body good. All those little slogans. Well, none of those slogans come out of medical research. They all come out of the dairy board, which the dairy board is a group of private dairy industry operatives who are trying to increase the sales of milk. But in fact, milk has never been shown to help strengthen your bones, never. It raises your risk of having worse problems with asthma, chronic sinusitis, and a variety of respiratory infections. If you drink whole milk, the fat content is so high, it will increase your risk for heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and even hypertension. So there are a variety of really negative health consequences associated with the consumption of dairy foods that we simply aren't told about. And in all likelihood, the people participating in these campaigns are doing it simply for PR reasons and aren't aware of the, you know, true health fallout associated with the consumption of these foods.
Right. And then there's also the genetic aspect, which you mentioned
absolutely
a little in your talk.
Absolutely.
And there we have Jackie Chan, an Asian and likely lactose intolerant. Mm-hmm. There he is promoting it. And Asians and everyone else are going to say, hey, milk.
Absolutely right. Same thing with many African-American entertainers. There they are with these milk mustaches. And as you mentioned, 95% of Asians cannot digest lactose. 95%. 70% of African Americans can't digest lactose. 74% of Native Americans are lactose intolerant. Whereas by contrast, only 15% of Caucasians have a problem with lactose. So the vast majority of people of color, I might also mention 53% of Hispanics are lactose intolerant, that the majority of Americans of color cannot digest lactose, yet the government continues to push these products because it helps preserve market share for the dairy industry, and it's really wrong. And again, these famous, you know, entertainers are lending their support to a campaign which, as you say, they probably don't eat the products themselves because they're statistically they're very likely to be unable to digest them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, we had the Williams sisters.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And it's not healthy. I mean, the Harvard Nurses Health Study showed that the women who were at highest risk of a hip fracture due to osteoporosis were the women who drank the most milk or ate the highest amounts of dairy food. So dairy calcium does not protect us against osteoporosis. These campaigns are really handing out misinformation to Americans to make them think that by drinking milk or eating other dairy foods, they're going to be helping themselves. In fact, the studies don't show that. They show the opposite.
And you mentioned the Harvard Nurses Health Study, probably one of the most quoted studies in medical, you know, history.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you got to look behind the, you know, the first analysis of it, because you pulled one of that out during your talk about what was
the
it?
The Harvard Nurses Health Study and its companion study, which is the Harvard Physician Study, are two of the most important epidemiologic studies ever done because of the numbers of people enrolled. I mean, there are literally tens of thousands of individuals enrolled in each study, and the fact that they're following these people longitudinally, meaning over a number of years, to actually see which diseases develop. But as you mentioned, frequently sometimes the media gives a misleading interpretation of the results that have been found in the study, and a case in point was the issue of the relationship between fat and breast cancer. Because a few years ago, the Harvard Nurses Health Study looked at the relationship between fat and breast cancer risk, and they did not find an association. However, and so the way the media presented that, the media said there's no relationship between dietary fat and breast cancer, and that was completely misleading, and that is not what the study showed. The study, when you looked at the women who are enrolled in the study, the lowest intake of fat in that study, the women were still consuming around 30% of calories from fat. Well, the lab studies that have looked at the relationship between breast tumors and fat intake show that it's not until you get below 25 to 30% fat calories that you actually see the fall off in risk. And so when you look at studies such as the incredibly important China Health Study done by Cornell University, which looked at thousands and thousands of rural Chinese, what you see is a very clear relationship that the higher the intake of fat, particularly animal fat, the higher the risk of developing breast cancer in women and prostate cancer in men, up until around 30%. Once you go over 30% of calories from fat, you plateau. That is, it doesn't make a difference if you eat 30%, 40%, 50%, 60%. Once you're over 30%, the risk is maximized. So as in the Harvard Nurses Health Study, all of the women are eating 30% or more, you're not going to see a result because they've already plateaued. But if you look at women whose diets are less than 30% fat, say 20% or 15% fat, you see a marked reduction in the risk of developing breast tumors. And furthermore, if you look at men, you see a marked reduction in the risk of developing prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm. Right. In fact, the incidence of dietary fat and breast cancer, maybe one of those ones that there is not a huge cultural difference. In other words, if you took like people in their native lands, mm-hmm.
like rural Asia, rural Africa, they're at a very low incidence, and it's the same throughout.
Well, and in fact, that's one of the reasons that the China health study is so important, because, you know, China's a gigantic place, and the and it's genetically homogeneous, which means that, you know, one of the problems with looking at a country like the United States, where you have various populations from various areas, is people say, well, you know, we're not really sure if the differing genetic backgrounds play a, you know, may play a role in the disease rates we see. Well, in China, you don't have that problem, because the gene pool is homogeneous. But what you do have is, you know, most of China is very rural, but there are some highly urbanized, very large Western-style cities where people have adopted a more Western-style life and diet. And what the researchers from Cornell found was that when they looked at the rural Chinese who were eating the traditional low-fat, plant-based diet, very low incidence of breast cancer, prostate cancer, heart disease, and so on. But as the people became more westernized and started to eat more meat and more fat, their incidence of these diseases skyrocketed and not only reached but even exceeded the rates that we see in Western countries. So that clearly points out that it's the diet, it's not the genes.
In fact, when you talk about a Western diet and when people adopt it and then they call it their, you know, cultural food or their soul food, and we run into problems that didn't occur in in our ancestors.
You know, I can't tell you how happy I am you mentioned that, because as an African American, I have a real problem with much of what we call soul food, because it's not soul food, it's plantation food. The last vestiges of the plantation that African Americans carry with them today are in the diets that we eat. Because when you look at traditional West African diets, they are plant-based diets that contain no dairy, very low in fat, very high in fiber, very little animal food. But when we were brought over as slaves, we were literally fed the garbage of the plantation. We were fed the pig's feet, the pig's tails, its ears, the ribs. We were given the ox tails and all of these very high-fat, greasy, you know, and the entrails, the which are called chitlins. This was the garbage of the plantation, the parts that the owners were unwilling to eat. They fed to the slaves. Well, we were released from slavery, but instead of reverting back to our traditional diets, which, you know, in all likelihood no one had a memory of, instead we embraced this plantation food as soul food. It is not soul food, it's plantation food, and we need to get away from it.
Right. And now it's disguised as corporate food, because virtually all foods, unless we happen to, you know, have a garden and actually go to the fresh produce area, it's corporate food, processed. Right. And
absolutely true. Very true.
Are you coming to Portland anytime soon?
Well, you know, I haven't been invited to Portland, but I'd be happy to come if someone wants to invite me out for a talk.
We should think about that. Well, thank you for talking with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right.
And, actually, someone has invited Dr. Mills to come speak in Portland. Northwest Veg is presenting Veg Fest at the Oregon Convention Center this weekend, September 18th and 19th. Dr. Milton Mills is speaking this Saturday at noon. Dr. Clapper heard earlier, and Dr. Mills will also be speaking at the Enhancing Health with Plant-Based Nutrition Series at the Adventist Medical Center on Friday, September 17th. Details of that event and VegFest are on the website nweveg.org.